It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have gray and overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing steady northwest winds at 9 miles per hour, gusting to 18, and they are back up to 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for scattered showers for today and tonight, cloudy skies. Northwest winds about 10, coming down to 5 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska high school students are asking school districts to not ban books following their meeting of the Association of Student Governments recently in Fairbanks. More on that sheen spotted in the Kuskokwim River. The barge has been pulled out of the water. And rocket launches at Poker Flats. Hopefully they're not too risky. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel pushing for a humanitarian pause in the fighting between Israel and Hamas to allow for more aid to get into Gaza and for more Americans and other foreign nationals to get out of the besieged territory.
It is very important that when it comes to the protection of civilians who are caught in a crossfire of Hamas's making, that everything be done to protect them and to bring assistance to those who so desperately need it.
Blinken met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and says he emphasized the need for the protection of civilians in Gaza and in the West Bank. The Israeli military has encircled Gaza City, separating its main urban center from the rest of the territory. NPR's Greg Myrie reports.
With its overwhelming firepower, Israel's infantry and armored vehicles have surrounded Gaza City. Hamas is fighting back, and Israel's military says it's waging face-to-face battles. Israel launched the ground operation a week ago in response to the Hamas attack on October 7th. It's increasingly clear Israel will focus its troops on northern Gaza in general and Gaza City in particular. Israel has repeatedly told Palestinian civilians to go to the southern part of the territory. Israel's military says more than 20 of its soldiers have been killed over the past week. Hamas has not announced casualty figures. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Former President Donald Trump has asked a federal appeals court to lift the gag order issued against him in his election interference case. Trump wants the restrictions put on pause while his appeal plays out in court. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
A U.S. District Court judge imposed the gag order last month, barring Trump from making public statements targeting prosecutors, court staff, and likely witnesses. Trump appealed. Now his attorneys are asking the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to lift the restrictions while it considers his appeal. In his new filing, Trump's lawyers say no court in American history has imposed a gag order on a criminal defendant who is actively campaigning for public office, let alone a leading candidate for president. They argue that the gag order violates the First Amendment, and they deny that Trump's public comments threaten the administration of justice. They want the appeals court to rule on the request by November 10th. If that ruling goes against Trump, they suggest they will appeal to the Supreme Court. Ryan Lucas, NPR News.
Separately, in Trump's New York civil fraud case, a judge is now issuing a limited gag order, barring all lawyers involved in the trial from making public statements about confidential communications. Testimony from Trump's sons wrapped today in New York, with Eric Trump saying he relied on accountants and attorneys to ensure the accuracy of financial documents. Donald Trump is expected to take the stand on Monday. The former president and his sons are accused of inflating the value of business assets in order to secure better financing terms and tax benefits. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska high school students are asking local school districts to refrain from following national trends in banning books, which they feel are occurring for political rather than educational reasons. A resolution on book bans was one of three resolutions brought before the Sitka School Board on Wednesday by local students who had recently returned from the annual meeting of the Alaska Association of Student Governments in Fairbanks. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
Sitka High Senior Kylie Orlando prefaced her introduction of the student resolution by asking school board members to put aside their personal political agendas. Book bans, she argued, have become weaponized by politics to the point that advocates don't really understand what they're banning.
The resolution I bring is about book bans, and they go much deeper than reading. The message behind them goes far deeper. They're about education and representation and so much more than that. They highlight not only the representation of minorities in the books, but also the representation that we are not receiving from many legislators who should have students' wants and needs as a priority.
The two-page resolution drafted by the Alaska Association of Student Governments contains statistical information compiled by the American Library Association about the significant increase in challenges to books in recent years. The resolution language allows for people to raise concerns about books as an important First Amendment right, but there should be an effort to verify their claims about the book, to read the work as a whole, and to determine whose information needs are being served by the books. Although the Sitka School Board may adopt some or all of the student resolutions in the future, this reading was an introduction. Board member Tom Williams said he couldn't support it in its current form, which reads, "Therefore, be it resolved that the Alaska Association of Student Governments does not support book bans in our state and country."
My issue with this resolution is that it's all-inclusive, all grades, all books, current books and future books. And without having a provision that would allow a banning of a book, regardless of its topic, its material, or its content, seems unwise, and I would not support a resolution that did not have some type of ability to ban material that we either know or don't know at this time.
Orlando was joined by fellow students Jasmine Wolf and Olivia Scan in introducing a second resolution in support of school staff receiving mandatory mental health training to identify certain issues in students. In her remarks, Wolf said, "It's no secret that in the past couple of years we're seeing an increase in mental health issues not only at the state level but nationally." She said that she and Scan brainstormed ideas to try and create change without making things worse. After many conversations with students and teachers, they felt staff training would help shift the burden off students so it's not all on them as they confronted the mental health issues around suicide prevention and social media. Phil Burdick worked in the district for 25 years as a teacher and administrator prior to joining the board. He was supportive of more training, but reminded Wolf that mental health issues were not exclusive to students.
We did offer mental health first aid for the entire staff, and I think that has been 4 or 5 years ago. It was very impactful for many staff. It was very difficult as well, because it impacts staff's mental health as well as students' mental health.
The third resolution of the evening involved gender equity in sports, but it's not the issue that's been in recent headlines. Francis Myers said that students had identified an imbalance in the Alaska School Activities Association sports program.
Whereas the ASAL handbook states, quote, "A school must provide equal athletic opportunity to both sexes in numbers that are substantially proportionate to enrollment." Whereas volleyball is the only unbalanced state sport at a 3A to 4A level that isn't co-ed, meaning men aren't allowed to participate.
Interim Superintendent Steve Bradshaw wanted to know how the resolution's authors proposed funding a new sports program. Myers responded that men's volleyball had increased in popularity nationwide by 50% in just the last 10 years. The purpose of the resolution was to support the creation of an ASA-sanctioned men's volleyball league and to provide districts, which had adequate funding and interest, momentum to start the sport in their schools. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A window for rocket launches at the Poker Flat Research Range north of Fairbanks opens this weekend. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute is contracted by NASA to operate the Poker Flat facility, and Chief Scientist Don Hampton says a pair of NASA missions are slated for this month.
We've got two starting on November 5th that are looking at aspects of our ionosphere, our upper atmosphere.
Hampton says the first project will probe the aurora's effects on low Earth orbiting satellites.
This is sort of a way to understand if we have an aurora that we know approximately how energetic it was, how might that affect the density of the upper neutral atmosphere that is affecting the satellite orbits.
Hampton says that mission requires active aurora, but this month's other experiment does not. He says it will use a rocket-carried electron gun to send specialized radio waves into the upper atmosphere.
And then they have very sensitive radio receivers on board, and they're going to listen for the radio waves that are produced by that, and especially how they run along the magnetic field lines to go to the other hemisphere and then bounce back to this hemisphere and see how that gets propagated across our magnetosphere.
The window for both of this month's missions, which are conditions dependent, runs through November 20th. Hampton says the public can track launch scheduling on the Poker Flat Facebook page and watch live countdowns on its YouTube channel. Three additional missions are scheduled for this spring for a total of five this season. There were no launches in the 2022-2023 season. In other Northern Science news, experiments at the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HARP, facility in Gakona will produce an artificial glow in the sky, which may be visible in a large area of the state. According to HARP's operator, the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute, a four-day research campaign that starts on Saturday will investigate ionospheric mechanisms that cause optical emissions. It says the air glow, which will appear as a faint red or green patch in the sky, could be visible up to 300 miles from the HARP facility, an area that includes Fairbanks and Anchorage. A large sheen first spotted on Steamboat Slough just up the Kuskokwim River from Bethel on October 30th is diesel fuel from a vessel owned by Vitus Energy. The Francis Snow has been successfully hauled out of the water, and as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, state and federal agencies are coordinating the cleanup.
Officials say it's still not clear how large a fuel spill that was discovered on the Kuskokwim River actually is and how it may impact the environment. On Monday, a pilot spotted a large sheen on Steamboat Slough and reported it to local Bethel authorities. State and federal authorities have been responding since.
We are communicating with ADF&G regarding some potential water sampling out there that has not been nailed down yet.
That's Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Coordinator Bernie Nowicki. He says his agency is working with the Coast Guard and the EPA to craft a response plan. The sheen is either diesel fuel or hydraulic fluid that was on board the Francis Snow, a vessel owned by fuel distribution company Vitus Energy. The boat had been tied up in Steamboat Slough about 3 miles upriver from Bethel. At some point, the boat sank, at least partially. Vitus told the state there was a 1.5-inch crack in the hull. The company estimates 250 to 300 gallons of diesel and 10 gallons of hydraulic fluid were on board at the time, according to DEC. On Thursday morning, Vitus Energy had successfully recovered the Francis Snow from Steamboat Slough and hauled out the approximately 60-foot vessel at the port of Bethel. A report released Wednesday by DEC says that Vitus will measure the amount of fuel and fluids remaining on board the Francis Snow to determine the size of the spill. People from Bethel to Neposkiok, about 7 miles downriver, reported smelling diesel fuel, according to the report. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is also responding, though the agency says it's still in its information gathering stage. Here's contaminant specialist Angela Matz.
that is in an area surrounded by the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge, and we're concerned about fish and wildlife resources that could be impacted by the spill.
The DEC report says waterfowl have already migrated out of the area, but people are still subsistence fishing on the river. And in the wake of the spill, some residents have been asking on social media if it is safe to go fishing. Vitus Energy CEO Mark Smith declined multiple requests for recorded interviews, but says the company had met with state and federal agencies to discuss the next steps. The DEC report says Vitus intends to continue cleanup efforts in Steamboat Slough and the surrounding area. In Bethel, with help from Francisco Martinez Cuello, I'm Evan Erickson.
About 150 people signed in to the public hearing for the Ambler Road Draft Environmental Impact Statement last night. Commenters noted the report found impacts to subsistence hunting and fishing, and as KUAC's Robin reports, nearly all opposed construction of the mining access road.
People packed a room at Raven Landing for the Fairbanks hearing, the first of a series to gather public comment on the Bureau of Land Management's draft supplemental environmental impact statement for the Ambler Road. BLM project manager Stacy McIntosh described the proposed road.
The project is basically to construct, operate, maintain, and eventually remove an all-season industrial access-only road from the Dalton Highway to the Ambler Mining District.
Tanana Chiefs Conference President Brian Ridley asked the BLM to deny a right-of-way for the road.
The Ambler Road has been constantly promoted for critical minerals, but the latest mineral resource reports for the four deposits in the Ambler Mining District dispel this claim. First, it's important to recognize that there are no mines in the Ambler Mining District. The promise of mineral independence is hollow.
Rachel Gadeke of Inyokuk Lake in the Brooks Range read a statement from her brother John about the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or ADA, who applied for the right-of-way.
ADA appears committed to forward action at all costs. This is a perverse development mentality that goes against all that the EIS is supposed to guarantee. This right-of-way application is riddled with words like as appropriate, when possible, and if feasible. Nowhere in this application is there any hint of respect or dedication to stakeholders in the region. Look at the wording in this supplemental EIS. It speaks only of impacts, pollution, extermination, contamination, and decline.
The BLM hearings are required by the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, and the Alaska National Interest Conservation Act, or ANILCA, to collect comments on the document, such as pointing out inaccuracies or deficiencies. But most commenters, like Emily Hikas of Fairbanks, agreed with the report and wanted instead to talk about the road.
The industrial traffic rumbling down this road would cross 2,900 streams, 11 major rivers, and 2,000 acres of wetlands. That it is important that we preserve the healthy existence of plentiful, freely roaming caribou, unburdened fish and plant populations, and the traditions of people who have stewarded this land for thousands of years before it was ever decided that the geological formations underneath of them are worth more than they are.
Many commenters traveled to the Fairbanks hearing from villages near the proposed road route. Frank Thompson, first chief of Evansville Tribal Council, said it's the effects of the mines at the end of the road that he's concerned about.
Because no specific mining proposal is under consideration, no specific mitigation is proposed for the indirect mining scenario. While the impacts of the proposed road are substantial and unacceptable, the indirect effects of at least four large-scale mines and perhaps up to a dozen other mines will be disastrous and unsustainable for the region.
One person at the hearing spoke in favor of the project.
My name is Craig Jones, and I'm from Ambler.
Jones is a project manager for the Ambler Access Project, headquartered in Fairbanks.
At one point in my life, I was a very vocal opponent to this project. I just want a seat at the table to make sure that we try and do what we can to mitigate all these concerns, to address them. I'm in for responsible development of access.
A link to the draft SIS and the instructions on how to submit written comments are available on the BLM website. The comment period ends December 22nd. BLM will host public hearings at the Community Center in Evansville next Tuesday evening, then Cayenne and Kotzebue later next week, and other impacted villages later this month. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Hiring is slowing, but not too much.
I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The Labor Department's October jobs report today showed a gain of 150,000. That's about half of September's total. The unemployment rate ticked up just a tenth of a percentage point. The numbers suggest a healthy labor market, the one that is cooling, which is what the Federal Reserve wants. A cooler labor market can reduce inflation. The White House is hosting a summit of leaders from North and South American countries, including Canada, Mexico, Chile, and Peru. The topics are supply chains and developing more trade within the region. A federal jury has convicted Sam Bankman-Fried, founder of the collapsed cryptocurrency exchange FTX. He potentially faces more than a century in prison for fraud and conspiracy. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
The Kodiak Arts Council brings you Diet and the Love Soldiers on Wednesday, November 15th at 7 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Diet blends together alternative country, folk, roots, and traditional music inspired by her indigenous worldview and northern life. She is backed by the Love Soldiers, Robert Van Lieshout and Bob Hamilton. Their enticing sound will instantly pull you in. This program is supported in part by the Western State Arts Federation and the National Endowment for the Arts, sponsored by the Islander Bookshop. More information and tickets are available at www.kodiakarts.org and at the box office 1 hour before the show.
Ooh, I do believe, even when we go, we don't ever leave.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the third day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:27. It will set again at 6:17, giving us 8 hours and 50 minutes of precious daylight. A loss of 4 minutes and 36 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature was 51 degrees set in 1915, then again in 1924, and our record low was 11 degrees set in Chile, 1985. I think I remember that. Currently 46 degrees under overcast skies. At the airport they have northwest winds at 9, gusting to 18 miles per hour. And 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service continues to call for scattered showers for the rest of the afternoon and evening. Cloudy skies, high near 46, overnight low of 40, northwest winds to 10, coming down to 5 tonight. For tomorrow, showers are likely, mainly after 11 a.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 45, northwest winds to 5. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high near 41, northwest winds to 15. Partly sunny for Monday. Looking at our local tides, the tide has just turned recently. We just had a low tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 5:53 p.m. and be 8.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 1:05 a.m. of 1.1 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 6:15 p.m. and be 12.1 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 1:24 a.m. of 1.8 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side out to 15 nautical miles offshore. North winds to 20 knots, becoming northwest 15 tonight. 6-foot seas coming down to 5 feet tonight. Northwest 15 tomorrow with 4-foot seas, and northwest 30 for Saturday night, seas coming up to 5 feet and then to 7 feet Sunday, finally up to 9 feet on Monday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 20 today, becoming northeast 15 tonight, 4-foot seas coming down to 3 feet tonight, northwest 20 tomorrow in the Shelikof with 3-foot seas. For Saturday night, west winds to 25 knots, same weather forecast for Sunday, seas to 4 feet, coming up to 6 feet on Sunday. Student creative writing submissions for Understory are now open to UAA students, and today is the last day to get in your story. If you're taking a minimum of 3 credits in the University of Alaska system, and you're somewhat of a storyteller or writer, submissions close today. Guidelines for submissions are available at understorysubmissions, all one word, understorysubmissions@gmail.com. The First Friday Art Walk is going on today. That's happening at Double Shovel Ciders, Kodiak History Museum, the Aleutic Museum, along with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Kodiak Arts Council has their card show tonight. Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op and Harborside Flyby are all featuring artists. At the Double Shovel Cider Company, they are showing Artist of the Month Tyler Jackson. Tyler Jackson is a captivating freelance artist with a unique perspective that blends mountain portraiture with mesmerizing underwater shots. Tyler's work redefines fine art photography. Again, that's at Double Shovel Cider today, this evening. Starts at 5 p.m. officially. At the Kodiak History Museum, they have their Objects Uncovered exhibit. Join the Kodiak History Museum for the opening of a new temporary exhibit. It's Objects Uncovered, featuring 14 objects from the museum collection, paired with stories from Kodiak community members. Free admission to the museum between 5 and 7 p.m. for the art walk. And the Aleutic Museum is partnering with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Join the Aleutic Museum at the National Wildlife Refuge Center for viewings of a short documentary film introducing Aleutic culture. And at the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op, Amanda Meyer of Wild Ones Design, she has handcrafted leather earrings, upcycled and recycled leather scraps from a small leather handcraft woman-owned company in Savannah, Georgia, where Amanda used to live. Amanda purchases the leather scraps in bulk and creates earrings that you can adventure in while feeling beautiful. Her floral jewelry is crafted from locally harvested flowers and botanicals. That's at the Harvest Food Co-op. And at the Harborside Flyby, Kodiak artist Heather Johnson from Mission Beach Studio will be showcasing her mixed media wall art. And then, after you've had all that fun, be sure to go to the opening reception of the Kodiak Arts Council's annual Artist Trading Card Show. That's bound to be lots of fun. You can meet all these different artists and some new artists. That's 5 to 7 p.m. also at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Stop by the Gerald C. for the reception to check out the trading cards. And then, after you're done with all that artist stuff, join Galley Tables for their season opening premiere Friday night. That's happening at 7 p.m. in the new downtown marketplace. The theme of this month's show is Origin Stories. Ellen Lee Tiller will be providing the music for this month's program. It's open to all. There's a $7 entrance fee is all. For more information or to sign up to be a storyteller, go to galleytables.com. But again, that's 7 p.m. tonight in the new downtown marketplace. Tomorrow, the Kodiak Balalaika Band is hosting a free performance at the Kodiak Public Library. It's an hour-long show. It starts at 2 p.m., goes till 3, obviously, and features ethnic folk tunes. So be sure not to miss that free show tomorrow at 2 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Lots of things are happening next Tuesday, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's regional planning team meeting. They will be meeting via Zoom at 9 a.m. next Tuesday. Topics of the meeting will be an overview of the 2023 releases, egg takes, and returns for Katoe Bay and Pillar Creek hatcheries, summaries of the 2023 salmon harvest and ADF&G and KRAA data collection and research projects, as well as a discussion of designating criteria for unique and wild stocks in the Kodiak area. The meeting is open to public attendance and participation. To get the Zoom link, contact Dakota Edland, that's Dakota, T-A-K-O-D-A, dot Edland, E-D-L-U-N-D, at alaska.gov, T-A-K-O-D-A, dot E-D, ALUND, at alaska.gov. Also, next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area will be having their regular meeting, their board will, and the Women's Bay Fire Hall, that's happening at 5:30 p.m. next Tuesday. Next Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. And, of course, next Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Also coming up on Thursday, Planning for Life's Changes begins. It's presented through the Kodiak College. They're proud to host a four-part series in partnership with the Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. That begins next Tuesday, 6 to 8 p.m. in BBB Room 128 in the college. At Session 1, you'll learn from a panel of experts in the field who will help you understand the importance of an advanced health care directive, a durable power of attorney, and a will. And they'll also share local resources that are available. And it's welcome to ages 18 to 108. Again, that's 6 to 8 p.m., Kodiak College, next Tuesday in room 128. Also going on Tuesdays, Scuttlebutt, Galley Tables Workshop for Youth. That goes on from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's Craft Room. It's a free weekly storytelling workshop for students. Call 486-7396 for more information.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.